Ah, yes, it's that time again. Just when you think you have it all figured out, something comes along that makes you question everything. This is Unexplained Incorporated, and we are open for business. Veil. We just want to know.
Ready to believe you.
Ready to believe you. It's all true. All of it.
Well, we made it. Merry Christmas to all of you true believers, or happy holidays for those of you, however you choose to celebrate it. Whatever you do this year, be safe and have a good time, because I know we all need it. And I really hope myself, Phantom Phil, and Angel Card Amy can be an assist for you as this is dropping Christmas night. We're recording this about a week out, and Amy is all decked out looking festive. Check the Instagram page. I not so much, because I'm not a sweater guy at all, but that's okay. But we're here tonight to do a special edition Christmas case study on the 2015 movie Krampus. And I didn't come across a lot of reports and sightings in my research. However, this is connected to the real world and ancient folklore a lot more than people think it is. It's not just based off of some Hollywood boardroom ideas. There's a lot that goes into it. So we're going to break down the movie. Then we're going to get to the story behind the movie, like we usually do on the case studies. And then we're going to talk about some sightings and stories. And we're actually going to get into a story from a friend of Angel Card Amy to kick things off in just a second. But first, Amy, you have some business to take care of involving the Instagram page, I believe.
Yeah. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas, everyone. I would like to give a shout out to Bonnie, CatLady528, who was one of my first volunteers for a long distance reading in the United States.
Hey, shout out to Bonnie. Thank you for your support on the show. And just before we start, Amy, you're planning on doing more of these types of readings in the new year and beyond, are you not?
Yes, I am. I'm hoping to build up my ability more so I can help more of you listeners out there who are unsure of what's going on or just have any insight of what's happening in your life that you're not aware of.
I understand what you're saying. And last week's show, we had on two members of the Spiritualist Church in Galt, which is out near our way, and they help a lot of people develop their mediumship abilities. So, I mean, that may be something you want to check out as well, but we look forward to hearing from that and more of your activities on the Unexplained Incorporated Instagram page. Give us a follow on there, Twitter or Facebook, if you have not already done so, and some more happenings, possibly involving a Patreon page coming in the new year, but there's going to be more details on that in January. So, Amy, I know you've been waiting patiently for this for like a couple of months now. Yeah. When I first announced that we were doing this. So, before we break down the movie itself, and offer our own insights and opinions on it. You have a really unique connection to this whole story because there's a friend of yours who I believe grew up in the Czech Republic or was originally born there. And she sent us an email about how this affected her childhood. So can you explain how this all came about and how you're connected to her and how it ties into our story?
Yeah, so she's a family friend, and I guess when she lived there, that it's just a Czech tradition, I guess, where some people dress up as St. Nicholas, also known as the devil, Krampus. And he visits on December 6th to people's homes. The kids are asked to recite a poem or sing a song or something, and that they get a treat from St. Nick. If you've been bad, you're supposed to just get coal from the devil, Krampus. We don't call them Krampus in Czech. That's a German name. It's just the devil for... Sorry, I can't pronounce that. Czechs?
Yeah, just like Czech Republic. And just before you continue, I just want to say that Krampus is originally... from the Bavarian area, from Germany. So that's why it doesn't quite translate into the Czech Republic, but it's very similar. And it's a scary thought trying to get coal, you know, from the devil. That'll get you to behave in a hurry. But continue with the rest of the email from Monica and let her tell how this story affected her childhood.
Hi, Monica. So when I was little, I was always terrified of the devil coming to our house. Who cares that Saint Nick and an angel was with him? It's the devil, LOL. My mom told her it was just people dressing.
Don't forget that LOL.
Her mom told her it was just people dressing up, but that didn't help. She remembers the last time they came over. She hid under the kitchen table and refused to come out. When her mom tried to pull her out of the table, she was crying and yelling, "I don't want to see the devil." You know, just a regular childhood memory.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's really interesting that even though she didn't have a direct sighting, she was very afraid of this thing and perceived it to be real. So this story really does have a lot of power.
I could imagine.
And we're going to be getting to that. Yeah, for sure. We're going to be getting to that a little bit later on, but right now we're going to get to the movie that came out in December of 2015. It's directed by Michael Dougherty, and looking up his filmography, this is the guy who wrote the X-Men sequel X2 and the much maligned, which I agree with, Superman Returns. He wrote that one as well. Definitely not one of my favorite rebooted films in any genre.
I do like the
and,
X-Men.
Well, it's interesting because the X-Men and the Supermen were, directed by Bryan Singer, but he's a whole other story I don't even want to get into right now. So odd that he had that connection. But Dougherty made his directorial debut in 2007 with the movie Trick or Treat. And then he went on to do Krampus and his most recent movie, which came out either late spring, early summer of last year, was Godzilla King of Monsters, which I never saw.
Is that the one with Bryan Cranston?
I don't know. There's been a couple of different Godzilla remakes lately, so I don't know which is which. This might be the one where Godzilla was taking on the monsters all on his own, so I don't know. Like I said, I haven't seen it, and I have no idea, so. But, you know, Bryan Cranston is not in this movie, but it does have a very interesting cast, which we're going to get to shortly. So the beginning of this movie I found was pretty interesting, and the whole theme throughout this movie is, I think it's a real good tongue-in-cheek kind of shot at the fake Christmas spirit, which kind of, permeates our lifetimes where it's not absolutely forced and you can get sick of it. I've seen some of this in my workplace and you go to the mall or whatever. Not so much this year, but in other years. But where does this movie start? She gets in the holiday spirit. It starts in the middle of a stampede. I've got to ask you, Amy, have you ever been to any door-crashing Black Friday sales in your life?
Thankfully, no. I usually try to get my Christmas shopping done in, like, November or end of October.
End of October. You're an early bird. That's good.
I try.
I for one, am the same, and I've never done that stuff. Well, no, that's fine. I have a system where I do about half online and half in person, and always wrapped up by the middle of December, like the second weekend, and this year was no different, and put me in as more of a Cyber Monday type of guy instead of door crashing and getting involved in all these crazy situations at big box retailers over shit you really don't need at the end of the day. So, I mean, I do like how the movie starts with that tone. And then I have a quick personal story, though, before we move on, is that when I was like 17, I worked at a Blockbuster Video. I'm dating myself here, but I don't care. And this was in the small town I grew up with, so it was like the place to go on the weekends. And me being a student, I mostly worked weekends, obviously, and the odd evening here and there. And things were fine up until Christmas, but the week between Christmas and New Year's was absolutely horrible. And I was quite shocked at the time and could not believe how mean and sinister and nasty people could be. Like right after the holidays at that point in time. And I was just about ready to give up on humanity at that point in time. So the opening scene of this movie resonates with me a great deal and kind of brought me back to those times. And I'm just like, oh yeah, this is how it gets during the holidays sometimes. And I like that the movie took this tone that, you know, the holidays aren't necessarily for everyone and not everyone is able to enjoy them due to various circumstances. And like I said, we go to from the Black Friday sale to the house where everything will be taking place. And there's a huge family that gets visited by another huge family. So we basically have like two families staying together under one roof in what ends up mysteriously being like the worst snowstorm of the century and eventually cutting power. But the main character of this movie is the boy, Max. And at the beginning of the flick, he's getting into trouble. And we see some of this in the opening scene for basically getting into a fight into the middle of his Christmas play. And I love when he's getting reamed out by his mother. And they imply that he was under the influence of Christmas fudge and candy canes. And then call him out for drop kicking his classmate into the manger. And I just got a visual of that. And I'm like, okay, that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
They do a really good job at laying out just how horribly dysfunctional this family is and how, you know, the mother, masterfully played by Toni Collette, is trying to, you know, use some of that fake Christmas cheer to hold everything together, and it backfires terribly and everything just gets worse and worse from there. But before we get into some of that, Amy, let's discuss some of the casting in this movie so far, because Michael Dougherty and his people, they did a really good job casting in this, I think, especially with a bunch of young kids who I don't think had ever acted before.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good cast. Adam Scott plays the father. He was Parks and Recreation, anyone else might recognize him. And sorry if I pronounce his last name wrong, David Kochner? He actually viewed our story.
I believe.
Okay, yes. He actually viewed our story that I had posted on Instagram for the teaser trailer. So thank you, David, for that.
Shout out to David Keckner. Sorry, just before you continue. Shout out to David Koechner for checking out our Instagram story. And I was a big fan of his from back in his Saturday Night Live days. And I just want to say one thing for the people who watched him back then before you continue, raise my hot cup of tea and give a cheers to Bill Brasky. Old school SNL fans, you'll know what I mean. And if not, look it up so you're not horribly confused. But anyway, I digress. Continue, please.
Yeah, that was pretty cool that he viewed our story. We actually tried to get him on the show today, but no harm.
Hey, he's probably a busy man with a big family. No harm, no foul. It's cool that he checked us out.
Yep, that was pretty cool.
And the aunt.
Yes.
And the aunt who loves her alcohol. Now, I can't remember her name, but she is fantastic in this movie, too. So tell me a bit about her.
I think her name was Conchetta Farrell.
Mm-hmm.
She played Aunt Dorothy, and she was also in 2 and a Half Men. Unfortunately, she has passed away this past year, I believe.
Oh, that's too bad.
I think it was this year.
I remember.
Yes, October 2020.
Oh, man.
Yes.
Well, rest in peace for Conchetta. I've discussed this with you before. I was never into 2 and a Half Men. I kind of gave up on sitcoms altogether a long time ago, but that's another story. However, I absolutely loved her performance in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I didn't look up her filmography, but I know I have seen her in other similar comedic roles, and she absolutely nails it as the aunt who, like I said, is very fond of her alcohol and is constantly blurting things out of her mouth without a filter at the wrong place during the wrong time.
In front of the children.
Yeah, and it's tremendous comedic writing and timing. And I'm going to get to this a little bit later on, but her affinity for schnapps is no accident. It's actually connected to the Central European legend of Krampus, believe it or not. So there's a reason why they put that in with her character.
Interesting.
Which you'll find interesting. And I said this again, Toni Collette is tremendous as the mother, trying really hard to hold everything together and is just failing miserably. And there's just so many moments early on in the movie where you get her facials and her body language where she looks like she is absolutely going to snap at any moment. And she's just barely holding it together. So it's great. And David Koechner and his family, he's that crazy uncle who I'm going to assume his character is like a diehard Ted Nugent fan. He's into, you know, hunting and football. And, you know, he just comes off as this total, you know, rightist type of guy. Or you know which side of the political spectrum he sits on. And great scene early in the movie where before the snowstorm they get some presents dropped off at their house, and he goes, "Well, why do rich people get all the free shit?" And then his wife just responds by saying, "They're probably Democrats." And that gave me a really good laugh, because I mean, even in a movie like this, they had to throw in the political jabs, which I think probably happens here in Canada, but more so in the States, I think ruins a lot of Christmas dinners and celebrations. So it was a nice little touch to put on those characters. Yeah. So the characters in this movie, very well written, very well portrayed. And like I said, especially by a lot of the younger kids who I think it was their first time on screen. And it just goes on to show how dysfunctional this family is and how much their Christmas spirit has died and how much they hate the holidays. And I'm going to get back to that soon, because there's a really good foundation, really good performances, good comedic timing. And in my opinion, you will not agree with me on this when we get to it, but in my opinion, the film later on diverts away from it and it kind of gets in its own way. But hold that thought for a minute. So how the plot unfolds is, you know, this family who really can't stand each other, and it's a decent sized house, but because there's so many of them, they are overcrowded. And it kind of, I don't know about you, but I thought it kind of looked like the house from Home Alone, but a little bit smaller.
Yeah, kind of, especially from the front. when they walk in.
The layout was the same. It just wasn't as big of a house, I would say. Very similar there. So we go from the 22nd to the 23rd and then Christmas Eve. And that's where everything goes wrong. So they're out in a kind of rural subdivision just outside of their town. And conveniently, all of their neighbors are away on vacation, or most of them are, the ones that are within walking distance of their house. We get this terrible snowstorm, and eventually it cuts all the power. And what happens is eventually we get a lot of strange sightings and strange sounds and whatnot, and then people just start disappearing throughout the film. And the oldest daughter of the family, she goes, sneaks out of the house, goes to stay with her boyfriend in the midst of all this and tries to get help. She gets taken out first. And what I found interesting, I don't know if this was intentional or not, but when she's hiding under the van, in that one scene, if you look at her coat closely, she has like a pentagram on the shoulder of her coat, like a button. And I thought that was really interesting because I think having that symbolism, it made her get targeted first by the beast.
I don't know if I noticed that.
You didn't notice that?
No. Yeah.
It was one little detail. Yeah, no, it's just one little detail I noticed, and I'm like, oh, I wonder if that's why she was the first to go, because with that pin, she attracted the... Yeah?
Well, you did forget how it did actually all start, with the kid wrote a letter to Santa.
Go ahead.
So Max, the son,
wrote
a letter to Santa, and he was going to give it to Santa at the mall, but I guess he didn't, and then his cousins had found the letter and was reading it all, and they got all in a big fight. They bully him, and his Christmas spirit was just going downhill from there, and he rips up the letter and throws it out the window, and then that's when the big snowstorm and stuff happens.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's very obvious early on that the snowstorm was not man-made at all, or I should say, like, it wasn't natural at all, and that it was probably made by some otherworldly beast. And that whole aspect of the story shows you the power of intention, right? Because you and I, we are into this stuff, and we get into it all the time, where if you write things to people, your energy goes into the writing, and it can have a direct effect on whoever reads it. And what you forgot to mention was that Max was basically wishing for a new family.
Yes.
And wishing that for Christmas they would all get taken away, and that he didn't want to be with them anymore. And like, those are some strong negative affirmations, even though his family is highly dysfunctional. And it just shows there's an underlying theme of this movie, is careful what you wish, you just might get it.
Oh, yeah.
And then we have to point to the grandmother, I guess, who is Bavarian, German, whatever you want to call it. If you read her body language early on, you can tell, even if you don't know what the movie's about or where it's going, you can tell that she's hiding something and that she's highly concerned about what's going on. And then, so at this point in the movie, they lose power. They're in the dark. A lot of weird things are happening, like the snowmen appearing on the lawn, which are actually, like, you know, I think the cocoon bodies of the people who went missing.
Yeah.
Like, they don't really explain it, but I kind of think that's where it is and all this stuff. And they're in trouble. They keep disappearing. And then finally, when the fire begins to die out, they start to see things in the chimney, and something tries to come into the house. And that's when they realize things are really starting to get out of hand. And then the grandmother, who's been very quiet and sheepish this whole time, breaks down and tells the story of Krampus and how it affected her growing up. And we got a really well done and creepy animated sequence to explain this, which I think was the best way to go to get the story over. And then they realize that this creature she's described as Krampus might be what they're really up against. And what's going on. So at this point, what we're seeing is a very well done, cynical, character driven, almost film noir style of like a Christmas horror movie. And I'm like, I'm really digging this. I'm into this. And we're almost about an hour in. The movie's almost an hour 40. Okay, total, not the longest movie. But I'm thinking, damn, they're doing a really good job on this. And then, not too long after the sequence in the fireplace, this movie turns into Gremlins on steroids.
It's my favorite scene, actually.
Okay, yeah, we're going to get to this because, I'm sorry, Gremlins was a big part of my childhood. I liked it growing up. However, I do not like how this movie portrayed it in the first hour and then made the switch to that type of a movie. I thought it really hurt it. It made it look really cheesy and I think could have been dealt with differently. So I want you, Amy, to take it from here about kind of what develops in the second half of this movie, and I want to hear why you enjoyed it, and then I might just reiterate and let you know why I did not enjoy it and thought that it hurt the movie. Now, with that being said, I will say right off the bat that the ending of the movie redeemed this whole goofy middle, which we're going to examine right now, but I want to hear your take on it.
I kind of had a feeling that was the scene you were going to talk about. But yeah, so I saw this movie in the theaters for the first time when it came out and went with a couple of friends of us, our mine, and we just started laughing. I think we were the only ones that were laughing in the theater. But so once the fire dies, you see this hook coming down from the chimney, and then there's a gingerbread man on it. And then the one cousin of the
CGI.
The one cousin goes over and he is the bait. So he goes over to take the cookie. He's like, oh, it's a Christmas cookie. It's not just any Christmas cookie. Once he starts biting it, the cookie comes alive and starts attacking him. One little cookie, just 10-year-old kid or
Now, I understand the need for there needing to be like henchmen or smaller villains to set up the main villain. And I know your favorite scene is David Koechner getting backed up in the kitchen with his rifle, basically getting attacked by these gingerbread men, which to me is almost a weird homage to the kitchen scene in Gremlins.
Yeah, I actually never thought of that. But yeah, it was
You enjoyed that scene.
I enjoyed that scene.
Okay. And then the characters make it up to the attic, and these mysterious presents that were dropped off early in the movie are all of these toys, which are somewhat, I guess, possessed and then come alive and start attacking everyone. And at this point, I'm just throwing my arms up and I'm like, what in the hell am I watching? Like, what happened to this movie? This was great, and now it's just gone totally weird, and I'm not digging it at all. It's so, like
Child's Play 101 or something.
Well, it's like this Child's Play meets Gremlins meets Batteries Not Included. Like, I was just like, it just struck me like some studio executive said, oh, we don't have enough crazy action scenes in this movie. I know what we need: killer toys. Have nothing to do
demonic
with
dolls, the story
and CGI gingerbread men. And so, Amy, I just want to say, the comedic stuff and over the top sequences in the middle to later half in this movie, it didn't bother you as a viewer?
No, I was actually surprised that they did that, but it's okay to have a little comedy in certain horror movies. I don't mind a little comedy in scary movies.
Okay. Well, that's fair. Number one, I will give it credit. It was a surprise that nobody was expecting. Number two, comedy in horror movies, I think, is a very fine line. Mm-hmm. There's times where it works and times where it doesn't. And in my own opinion, I'll just strike this as to where it didn't work for me. Okay? Had there been more? Now, there was a lot of comedy early in the movie, but it was through dialogue and nuances. It wasn't through this whole cartoonish chicanery, if you will. So I think that's what bothered me the most, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
You have your view, I have mine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, yeah, because I have this written in my notes where where it says all of a sudden they decide that the Krampus monster has elves, and then I wrote elves with like 7 question marks next to it.
Yeah.
And then when Tom, played by Adam Scott, starts going, "Are you kidding me?" and "Are you serious?" I'm like, "Yeah, you just reflected what I was thinking," but for totally different reasons. So,
however, the clown doll is quite disturbing. A great big
anything
jack
involved
in the box.
Yeah, it was disturbing, but even that, I don't know if it really fit the context of the rest of the movie. That's all I'm saying. Yeah, like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, just seemed like a cheap gimmick. And another thing I wrote in my notes, which had me rolling my eyes, was when the rest of the family's in the living room near the fireplace and all that crazy stuff's going on in the attic, the ceiling is starting to crack. And everybody is just standing there watching the ceiling crack away. And I'm thinking, if you're watching that, you may want to run to a different room, because obviously the top level is going to come down on top of you and you're probably going to die. And
especially if you're holding a baby.
Yeah, there is a baby in the middle of all this too, which I thought was actually a very interesting development in the way they did it. So, I mean, and that was a great way to take the drunken Anne out of the story. She couldn't get involved and start cursing because she had to take care of the baby while everyone else was trying to figure out what was going on and get everything together. So, like, that aspect of it worked out pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
So, at this point in the movie, what happens is they devise a plan for whoever's left to go out, because there was a scene earlier in the movie where the dad tried to go out and he found an abandoned snowplow and then had to turn around and go home. They want to go back to that snowplow, drive it into town, and just try to see if they could get help from anyone. And by the way, the landline and the cell phones all die in this movie too. And then they have their iPads too. And, of course, when the iPad battery dies, that's when things really start going wrong. So I thought that was a cool correlation as well.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, this movie ends where it's only down to Max and one of his cousins who haven't been abducted yet by this thing. And then this, to me, this is where the movie actually redeems itself, despite all the craziness I talked about. They get abducted, and they're almost in the middle of the forest, and there's this ritual going on with not just Krampus, but all of these similar looking creatures.
The elves.
It's really creepy.
Yeah.
What's that?
I think they were the elves.
The dolls and all that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They came out of the snowman.
But why couldn't we keep them? Yeah, but why couldn't we keep them in that form instead of doing all the stupid stuff with the toys and the gingerbread? But yeah,
I digress.
Moving on. But anyway, this whole setting's totally creepy, and then Max finally breaks down and says he wants to be back with his family, and he takes back everything he said in the letter, which I believe makes another appearance, and he gets tossed down into what looks like a fiery pit. It looks like, you know, the same pit Scrooge ends up in A Christmas Carol and all that, and he wakes up, and he's like, oh, it's just a dream, his family's opening their gifts on Christmas morning. Everything's good. But then what does he open up? He opens up his present, and he gets the bell.
Which is like
Krampus's. Yeah, it's Krampus's calling card. And everybody just stops dead, and they do a big zoom out. They're not home anymore. They are, in fact, trapped inside of a snow globe. And what looks to be Krampus's quarters or his workshop with a whole collection of snow globes from all around the world or whatever. And I thought, okay, I'm going to pretend the last camera shot of the movie didn't even happen, where all the toys appear for one stupid final jump scare. Take that away, it's a pretty amazing ending. Totally sticks with the theme of the movie. So with that being said, I just wanted to say I really like the beginning and the ending of this movie. The middle, not so much, but I see it didn't bother you. So
no.
overall, we give this a thumbs up. And I want to point out a couple of things before we move on to the true story and the background folklore. Oh, yeah. What do you have to say first?
I kind of, for the ending, I kind of felt they did like the same thing they did for Jeepers Creepers at the end, in a way. Like how they zoomed out, and then it was like the almost kind of the exact same setting as the Creepers Workshop. If anyone's ever seen
there's a lot
Jeepers Creepers.
Yeah, no, there's actually quite a few parallels between this movie and that one. This is more like a Christmas version of it. Yeah. One thing I have to say throughout the whole movie that was a big positive was, you know how the old horror movie rules are, and I think we've even talked about this on the show before, is that the creatures you don't see are normally the creepiest.
Yep.
However, in this one, they do a great job at hiding the creature's form and its physique and creates a whole lot of mystique. However, at the ending, when you do see it in its full form with its full face, it's almost scarier than the shadow.
Yeah.
And time again, we've seen monster reveals in these movies where you're like, okay, seeing the outline in the shadow was way scarier than the actual form itself. But when they reveal the form of this thing in and of itself, it's pretty damn scary.
Mm-hmm. They did a good job on makeup. So
makeup effects, like the horns, the hook, the tentacle like fingers, the yellow eyes, like just
that's creepy.
So I mean, kudos to them for very spooky, well done creature effects. A couple of, you know, underlying themes of this movie, which I love they got into, which we talked about, where the themes of intention, gratitude, because none of the characters in this movie are showing gratitude of any kind. Like, even though they don't get along with each other, they still have it pretty good. And by the end of the movie, they're fearing for their lives in a snowstorm with no power and nothing to do. So, yeah, I think the dysfunction was pretty good before compared to what it turned into. And then there's the power of intention, and this leads into curses and dark magic, where if you intend to harm someone, like Max writing a letter to his family taken away, that intention comes back and harms him and his family tenfold. So goes with the story of intention and to be careful what you wish for because you just might get it. And before we move on to some of the history and the true events surrounding Krampus, is there anything further you'd like to add to the movie, or did we pretty much nail it all, even in our disagreement?
I think we got it. Yep.
So anyone who's into these types of movies, I do recommend it overall, despite my one glaring criticism. If you can get past that, you really will enjoy this movie. So just thought I'd bring that up. So here are the origins of Krampus. It didn't exactly come from one place. It came from several. Your friend Monica from the Czech Republic, Germany, and Austria as well, have all had variations on this story. And all of these regions are connected to the Alps Mountains in one way or another. So I think people settling in or near the mountains gave it some mystique that there might be some hidden creature or diabolical force in there, because so many of those mountainous ranges, like, they're untouched by humans. So, I mean, who knows what could be lurking in there or what has been seen in there. So I think the legend originating from countries that border those mountainous regions, I don't think it's a coincidence at all. So Krampus, where does that name come from? Well, it comes from the German word Krampen, which means claw. And I guess you could say that hook is very reminiscent of a claw, so to speak.
Just reading up here on Krampus.
Looking for additional information. I don't know. You have a pretty scared look on your face.
I don't know if I like the December 6th. That's Larry's birthday, my dog.
Oh, no. Are you serious? Oh, yep. Okay. Yeah, we're going to talk about... Oh. I'm sorry to hear that. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But so it comes from the word cramping. And like we said before, this is a spirit that is known for giving seasons beatings. That's not just a pun. That's was an actual thing. St. Nicholas, who would morph into Santa Claus, would give the good kids gifts. Mm-hmm. And then Krampin or Krampus would give the bad kids beating with a whip or a switch physically, or would traumatize them mentally and give them nightmares. Mm-hmm. And the really bad ones would get stuffed into his sack, like his own Santa sack, and then be taken to his underworld lair. Mm-hmm. And what parent would wish that upon their kid? I don't know. They would have to be pretty sick and twisted. But I guess it scared the kids straight. So, I mean, hard to say. And also, I also heard recently that Santa Claus had ties to the Norse goddess Eir, I believe the name is. Uh-huh. It's H-E-R. And Krampus was also supposed to be the son of this goddess as well. So there are some Nordic ties to this as well. And it's an inversion of St. Nicholas. Now, in December of both 2016 and 2017, Krampus, while it was moderately successful at the box office, it kind of took on a life of its own throughout the world. And we started to see full-fledged celebrations of what's known as Krampusfest. Okay. I don't know if you watch Seinfeld at all, Amy, but they had the one Festivus Christmas episode. And then all of a sudden people in the real world started throwing like Festivus celebrations and doing their own versions of it to pay tribute. I think Krampusfest was very similar. And in the United States, it started to pop up in places like LA, Philadelphia, and New York. And this was based on, unfortunately, your dog Larry's birthday, December the 6th, which is where... No, I know, which is where this whole thing comes from. Krampusloth, which was the original fest, it was a pagan celebration that turned into a parade that celebrated St. Nick. And it got celebrated on the 6th of December. However, like Christmas Eve now, December the 5th, the evening before, was when either St. Nick or Krampus would visit. Okay. St. Nick would usually get offerings of fruit and nuts. Mm-hmm. Krampus, if Krampus was to visit, he would be offered a drink of schnapps.
Mm.
And guess who loves their schnapps in the movie? Chatty Auntie Kathy.
Mm-hmm.
So, very cool little detail they put into the movie there for her, you know, trying to do shots of schnapps with the kids. Say that three times fast. With the kids. And it turns out that this is an alcoholic beverage that was actually offered to Krampus himself. So crazy.
Wow.
So in Austria, where one of the countries that talked about this legend, Krampus was somehow banned by the fascist government from 1934 until 1938, which is just pre-World War II, as it was being seen as anti-Christian. Go figure. And I have these questions as well. What if, with the rise of, you know, the popularity of this movie, which we're talking about right now, and the Krampus festivals, is this pop culture phenomenon putting a dark spell on us at all? Do you wonder, like, is it making people more crazy because they're celebrating something that does truly sound like evil and wicked?
I don't believe so.
No. You think it's just another way of honoring a pagan tradition?
Yeah, and probably just to scare people.
Okay. Well, here's another question. What if, like the Slender Man, because I talked about this on the Slender Man case study, what if some weird sightings and happenings happen associated with Krampus, and that Krampus never really existed, but because of the celebrations in the movie in the discussion about it. What if we will it into our physical existence, like supposedly Slenderman has been? What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I don't know if I even want to go there. I don't know.
You want to go there? Yeah, yeah. And you know what? That's probably a good idea.
No comment.
Here I am the last half hour or so talking about, oh, be careful what you wish for. And then what do I say? Hey, what if this really happened? I'm kind of going to contradicting myself here. So yeah, we'll pass on that one for sure. Like Oktoberfest, which is also Bavarian nonetheless, one of the biggest celebrations of Krampus got documented in 2017, in December of 2017, at the Milwaukee Krampusnacht, which I guess is Night of Krampus. And some of these Bavarian names I'm probably going to butcher, so bear with me. It was at a paranormal conference in Milwaukee in 2017, and there's a big news story on it. And they do these parades where people dress up like Krampus and the Krampus elves and the creatures and parade around. And it looks absolutely frightening. It's not the type of celebratory parade you'd want to attend to. And I remember seeing footage of one in the Czech Republic where this one was going up to the guardrail and scaring a little girl on purpose and putting her into tears. And I'm just watching this like, why would you take your child to this? Like, it's really messed up. However, in 2017, I mean, it was probably different this year because of the pandemic. But outside of Milwaukee, as of 2017, probably till 2019, because like I said, it's probably not happening with COVID this year. Mm-hmm. But Krampus parades were planned in Bloomington, Indiana, Detroit, Michigan, Elgin, Illinois, Green Bay, Wisconsin, Indianapolis, Indiana, New Orleans, Louisiana, Omaha, Nebraska, Portsmouth, New Hampshire, Providence, Rhode Island, Richmond, Virginia, St. Louis, Missouri, Washington, D.C., and Ypsilanti, Michigan.
Wow.
So this phenomenon, it seems, since the movie and since the rise of the Krampusfest have spread like wildfire. So next Christmas, if we're back out in public with each other in somewhat normal lives, I'm really curious to see how much further this phenomenon of parades are going to spread, because it's gotten a little crazy.
It is nuts.
However, in folklore, there are more Christmas monsters other than Krampus.
Oh,
God. Oh, God, it's exactly right. Here's a couple for you. There's a female version called Frau Perkta. Okay, and some of the other names are Berta, Berkdi, and Hulda, depending on the religion. This did not get into Christian folklore like the way Krampus did, but author Al Ridenour writes that she was both a monster and a goddess figure, both hideous and beautiful, and shared the duality persona of Saint Nick and Krampus, because Krampus was just an inversion of Saint Nick in the Christian folklore. And even though she hasn't achieved the same level of popularity as Krampus, plus the fact she goes by like four or five different names, her terrifying traditional appearances during the 12 days of Christmas were recorded by famous fairy tale author and folklorist Jacob Grimm. He says she was known for giving silver coins to the good boys and girls, while the bad ones, oh my goodness, would be sliced open, fouled, and restuffed with straw and rocks.
What?
Here's a sobering thought for you on a Christmas night. It's thing that it's only folklore. However, this creature does make appearances under costume at the Krampusnacht celebrations today. And yeah, I can imagine it's horribly terrifying. Mm-hmm. One that's a little less terrifying is in Iceland, as children could be visited by the Yule Cat. So I guess instead of Saint Nick or a giant demonic creature, it's a giant cat, which is quite interesting. And of course, I cannot forget about this one here, Bell's Nickel, or Schnickel,
I've heard of that.
Which was brought to the Yeah, you have heard of that? Yeah, mm-hmm. It was brought to the U.S. by settlers and the cranky cousin of Santa. and exists primarily as part of Pennsylvania Dutch folklore. He's a fur-clad, tattered-looking man who both gives out gifts and beatings with his whip. So, once again, that is according to the Morning Call. And once again, that sounds like a very dualistic thing, like Saint Nick and Krampus. And then there's the, this one here. We're going to end on this one because it's pretty bad. But it deserves mention. Well, bad in a different kind of way. There's a controversial one known as Zwart Piet, which translates into Black Pete. And the biggest thing, and this is according to National Geographic, it says that this character was apparently covered in blackface, which just isn't good for anybody. And according to National Geographic, it was inspired by a pre-19th century slavery. And as late as the 20th century, he traveled with, what is that name there? Sinterklaas, which I guess is another version of Santa Claus. He would kidnap the naughty kids and then would spirit them off to Spain. Why Spain? I don't know. That's an interesting. So, I mean, there's all sorts of different versions of like a dark shadow or a dark copy of Santa Claus all over the world. Gift giver, whoever it is, it's a different culture. And this Black Pete one sounds like one of the worst because, wow, just I don't even know what to say to that. But Krampus is not the only spirit or monster to be feared in cultures throughout the world. And I want to give a special shout out to grunge.com for letting me present a lot of that information, which that's one of their big articles on the Krampus phenomenon. So, Amy, I got to say, we're almost out of time here, but I was quite disappointed to find out that when we did our research for this show, we didn't find a lot of documented Krampus sightings.
I think that's Not nearly a good thing.
But I thought, you know, if there was, it would make a more interesting podcast, you know, selfishly. But do entertain this thought. This comes from an article in The Guardian, published December the 8th, 2019. And this is the headline of the article. Austria struggles with marauding Krampus demons gone rogue. What this article was about was this was a town in Austria celebrating Krampusnacht, having the parade where everyone's walking around dressed Krampus demon or whatever you call it. But apparently some people before donning costume and getting into the spirit of this had a little too much schnapps to drink, so to speak. And there were constant tales in this town of drunk and disorderly conduct, assault, and even arson. So apparently some of these Krampus devils were breaking away from the pact and just causing random acts of destruction in their town. Well, it makes me wonder this. In the coming years, like, you know, when the pandemic's over with and we can have parades and stuff on a regular basis, I wonder if there's going to be a rash reporting of Krampus sightings because some of these people who celebrate the Krampus Nacht or the festival, if they're getting drunk, dressing up and running out around residential neighborhoods or forests, just causing trouble while in costume, and people may think they're seeing an actual creature. I would not be surprised if this starts happening beginning in 2021.
Yeah. As long as they don't make their way over here.
As long as it's not in your backyard, who cares?
Yeah.
Okay.
Nowhere near here.
And I'm going to leave you with, same here. But on the flip side, if you do see a sighting, it's more likely a disorderly human being in costume instead of an actual creature.
Yeah.
But here is something to think about, though. I have to give a special shout out to the Darkness Prevails YouTube channel, which is a channel that has listeners invite They're invited to write in and share their scary real-life stories. And on December 13th of 2017, which is odd, this is around the same time a lot of the parades were getting popular and gaining more widespread notoriety around the world that same month, Darkness Prevails, the channel, posted a video with what they claim to be five real-life Krampus sightings from their fan base. So out of the five, I recommend you go check out that channel because it's a really interesting video to listen to. It's about a half hour in length. Mm-hmm. The first two submissions are from Washington State and West Virginia, which, by no coincidence, have exclusive histories with crypto sightings.
Wow.
You know, Washington State, Pacific Northwest, Bigfoot, Sasquatch. West Virginia, similar things, and the origin of the Mothman sightings.
I was just about to say that.
So those people from those two, people from those two states have claimed to have seen real life sightings of Krampus. But one common theme of all five of these stories, the other three stories, they didn't share their location, unfortunately. But one common theme tying it all together is that they had sightings after having serious fights and bouts of dysfunction with their families around the holidays.
Wow.
Which kind of proves to me, if these stories are in fact legit, then maybe there is an evil spirit being conjured by people who do not have the holiday spirit whatsoever.
Yeah.
It makes you think.
Crazy. I better start making some cookies and people. Getting in the holiday spirit.
Well, I'd say with the way you're looking, you're already in the holiday spirit, Amy. And I'm not trying to scare people into acting a certain way or to be people pleasers or anything. But I mean, just be very mindful, especially this year, about how your energy is around the holidays. And if you see or experience anything unusual, by all means, reach out to us, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, The Unexplained Incorporated, at PhantomPhil3. And you can write me, PhantomPhilUnexplained@gmail.com. And Amy, of course, runs the Instagram page. So if you have any unusual sightings over the holidays that you want to talk about, hit us up. We'd love to hear from you. And Amy, do you have any final thoughts on the legend of Krampus? Because like I said, my final thoughts are, like the Slender Man, we don't perceive it to exist. However, a lot of strange happenings have happened to the point where we may will this thing into existence. But hard to say. But as for right now, we can only stick this into a movie context in the context of folklore, with people maybe taking celebrations a little bit too far. So what are your final thoughts?
Not too sure.
You just don't want it coming in your backyard.
Yeah. Yeah, to stay away. No, I can't think of anything at the moment.
Well, one thing I need to do is our friends at the Crypto Technical Podcast, they've done a full episode on this as well. And I didn't listen to it before recording this because I didn't want to, you know, jack any of their info, but I'd love to hear their thoughts on it as well. And if you have any thoughts, hit us up on the social media. Well, Amy, just before we sign off for the holidays, I just want to remind everyone, we're going to be back, you and I, in 2 weeks' time for another case study, as we're going to be back on schedule starting in January, which means the case studies will be early on in the month. So January the 8th, you and I are going to do The Exorcism of Emily Rose. Is this a movie you've seen?
Yes, I believe it is. Long time ago. Or whenever it was
out. So you may need to do a second watch just to familiar.
Yeah.
Okay. You give it a second watch. I'm going to be watching it for the first time. And a quick shout out to Leslie Knowles, who hooked me up with a bunch of info on the true story behind it. I just found it again recently, tidying up, and I realized, oh yeah, I meant to do a case study on this a long time ago, and it's been a while since I've, you know, talked about possession or anything like that, or a good exorcism story. So that's going to be you and I back on Unexplained, January the 8th. The rest of the January lineup is almost filled up. We're going to have a couple of more podcasters on and two special appearances from Amanda Drago. So the psychic mailbag, either hit up Angel Card Amy on Instagram, email me, phantomphilunexplained@gmail.com, or amandadrago444@hotmail.com. We're going to take your questions for a psychic mailbag and stories. And Amanda's going to do a special global reading for the upcoming year 2021, and that is going to air on January 1st. Mm-hmm. We don't take any weeks off here at Unexplained. We've got new content coming your way. And Amanda's also going to discuss some changes she's mm-hmm. going to make to the psychic mailbag segment, so you're not going to want to miss that at all. Amy, mm-hmm. I think I've said it all. Any final thoughts before we sign off here?
Mm-hmm. Just stay safe and have a happy holiday, and be sure to set your intentions to good.
Absolutely. And that means between Christmas and New Year's, be nice to the people working in the stores. We don't want to put up, we don't need your crap. Okay. Reliving my traumas from like 20 years ago, but I don't care. I think it's an important message now more than ever. Mm-hmm. Amy, thanks again. I'm really sorry that Larry shares the same birthday as the Krampus Fest, but it's been awesome having you on board this year, and Merry Christmas to you, Larry, and the family, and I wish you all the best, because we'll talk in 2021, and I think we're going to take things to new heights as well.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, anytime.